podcast. How much of your day as a product manager is actually manual? Sure, you have some automation set up, maybe even an AI tool or two, but you're still digging, still pulling together sales calls, CRM notes, support tickets, Slack messages, emails, and that one forgotten meeting that somehow contained the most important customer insight of the entire quarter. Classic. The feedback exists, it always did. It's just scattered across 12 tools and 3 people who've since left the company. Bagel AI pulls all of that together automatically. It prioritizes based on your specific KPIs, surfaces trends and signals you didn't know you were missing, and closes the loop with every stakeholder inside the tools they already use. The full picture, finally in one place. Visit bagel.ai and make every feature count.
Today, I'm privileged to be joined by Ohad Biron. He is the CEO and co-founder at Bagel AI. Ohad, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, Anthony. Thank you for having me.
Before we get started, do you want to just tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and about your kind of journey to your current position, maybe?
Perfect. I'd love to. First, again, thanks for the opportunity of being here. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Bagel AI. With more than 20 years background in the industry, both on the R&D side, I spent a decade there in roles like product management, information system engineer, doing incubation of the next generation of products in a big corporate. Then I switched sides to the go-to-market and also to startups, and I joined a French startup in the space of autonomous vehicles, building the whole go-to-market from scratch to more than 10 million in revenue. Wherever I was, that friction and tension and misalignment between product and the stakeholders existed. And that's why I started Bagel, to be that glue between product and its stakeholder, to help product managers to take decisions that drives the business.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really, really key pain point, I think, definitely, that product teams have to deal with. Okay, yes. So we are here today to talk about two particularly big growing issues. And I suppose this is probably an issue that's been around for a long time, which is feature inflation within product teams. And also how that connects with kind of the rise of AI. AI tools. Do you want to just dig into that a little bit for me, sort of outline the problem and how these two issues have sort of collided a little bit?
Yep. So I'm sure you all feel it, right? And if not, you're probably in the wrong profession. But the tool set we have today and the speed in which we can develop and iterate, right, has just become insane. And we see indeed a proliferation of internal AI initiatives, which is amazing. We're also doing it ourselves, where we are AI native ourselves, and that's a big advantage for early stage companies nowadays that can build it from the ground up, right? Just a few examples, right? Just something that I see all over. Our customers are doing it. We're doing it. Just think about how many automations you can do today with Slack, right? How many you build with a prompt, you build an agent that can ask whatever you have in Slack and all about all the interaction with customers internally and develop notifications around that. To some extent, I saw even companies building with prompt, turning Slack into their main ticketing system, right? It's insane. And that's very, very easy to do. And this is, of course, only one example. I can give you an example of, how this affects Bagel AI internally, right? We are building ourselves today. We're enhancing our proposition with very much ease, Bagel, I'll explain about Bagel in a second, but our core proposition lies on feedback sources we digest, right? And today we can build any feedback source, and any new prospect comes with another feedback source we don't have, right? But this is today solved easily, and we can build any new integration in an hour. This is something that didn't exist a year ago. But today, if you have the right infrastructure, you can definitely move faster and build features that are significant to your business with very much ease. Now, the trap is not to fall into like a feature factory, really understand what needs to be done and focus on your core business. That's become a harder task nowadays.
Yes. Yeah, I can imagine so. So what you're saying is that because it's easier than ever with AI, it's tempting to just sort of become, just overload yourself with just more and more features and lose sight of kind of what your core business focus is, basically.
Whoa. Exactly. There's the fact that shipping features is very, very easy, right? And the development team is already moving 10 times faster than before, right? Add to that the fact that there's a ton of pressure from management to move faster, right? Everybody talks about product velocity and so on. And we will deep dive into that further down the podcast. But so there's a lot of pressure top down, right? There's the ease of building, you know, bottom up. And now if you don't navigate that ship towards the right direction, then you will fall into like building things that nobody cares. And then you risk of, you know, hurting your core business and your product and the quality of it, et cetera, et cetera. That's a very, very big risk. I was listening 2 days ago. I give you an example, and not only me saying it, of course, right? So I'll give you an example from a podcast that was, you know, published 2 days ago. They interviewed the head of Claude Cowork Design. Her name is Jenny Wen. Right? So Claude Cowork, right, is the maybe number one go-to today to, you know, build these AI automations, right? And she basically said, we can do wonderful things, right? But someone, at least for the near future, will still need to decide what to build and why it matters, right? And that's the core skill that is here to stay and become even a harder task nowadays.
Yeah, harder, I suppose, because like you said, it's just, I guess, because there's so many things we can build out, it's tempting, it's easier to lose focus, right? So it's harder to sort of keep your eye on the kind of, especially like kind of for customers, like what is actually going to make a big difference for customers, right? What are the actual key pain points? What do they actually need? That's mm-hmm. always kind of the thing, isn't it, with any AI tool, I think, is the question you still have to ask is the same as any other product, isn't it? Is that how is this actually going to make a difference in people's lives? What problem yep. is it going to solve for them? You know, yep. it's very simple, but...
The classical product management role, right, to understand the pain points of our customers, understanding what drives the value for their customers, what drives growth for the company, what's the real impact, right, for our customers.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that is definitely something that people have to keep in mind always. Mm-hmm. Okay, so should we talk a little bit about metrics?
Yep.
And team misalignment?
Sure.
Okay, so teams measure success by how quickly they ship features a lot of the time. But mm-hmm. why can feature velocity be a misleading metric? And what kinds of metrics matter more for real business impact, in your opinion?
Yeah. So again, it comes back to focus, right? And how not to fall into the trap of being a feature factory and really drive impact. If you could formalize it, what you actually need to optimize is time to impact. What we used to think about time to value, right? But time to impact is actually what matters nowadays in the product velocity, you know, world. Meaning you have to maximize the impact, right, and minimize the time to market. That's basically the new formula to optimize. There are many that translates into other interesting metrics that you can categorize them by, of course, efficiency and alignment and impact in your core business, right? It's like standard trivial, but they go under some transformation these days. We see that also. We have the luxury, so maybe just a bit of, you know, context, right? So what is Bagel AI and who are our customers, so you can understand from where I'm coming and saying that, right? So yeah, Bagel AI is a tool for product managers, right? It's a product intelligence platform, AI native, that automates the entire product management lifecycle and helps product managers to steer their company and the roadmap towards the right direction. And we do that by analyzing all the different feedback sources like gone calls, support tickets, notes in your CRM, NPS, all these qualitative data sources. We analyze them. We automatically extract the evidence, the product pains, the product gaps, the product issues, categorize them, triage them, basically reevaluating your roadmap, quantifying your roadmap. We connect it to any quantitative data point and telling you what to do, what is missing, what's more trendy, and not only the planning, but also during the execution and even post-launch. So that's basically Bagel. We can come back to that later. But my point is that we, our main persona, our product managers, we are the number one tool for today for product managers in terms of accuracy and context. So we see a lot of product teams in enterprises, in the most known companies nowadays, and how they work and how they measure. And so let's try to unwrap it. For example, some things you may not have heard of. I talk about categories of metrics, right? One category of metric, we talk about alignment, right? Because of all this, this speed that, you know, happens in silo in the company, how do you actually measure if we have proper synchronization between all these, you know, meaningful and wonderful initiatives, right? One of the metrics I was very surprised and love it, and since then I adopted it as well to Bagel, is called rework ratio. Meaning, when I can ship features very fast, right, how many of them come back to, you know, development because of, you know, enhancements requests or bugs or something that, you know, was wrongly described or done, right, in the next quarter. Right? This means a lot about the quality in which I'm shipping, and more importantly, whether I actually solved the pain that I intended to do. So this is something really, really nice. And because if I didn't synchronize well with, let's say, my go-to-market team, I understand, or didn't analyze properly what is the exact pain I'm solving, then I'm developing something just because of a gut feeling, or because someone in a specific, let's say, region shouted very loudly. So I'm doing something without proper validation, without proper understanding of why this is needed, then it's inevitable that this will come back to us as a boomerang.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can tarnish your kind of brand reputation ultimately, right? And I suppose, I can, you know, attest to the experience myself, like kind of dealing with products that, you know, are great, but you just get kind of feature overload, right? You just kind of like, sometimes I think you can fall into the trap of thinking more is more, right? You think that like, just because you can do so many different things that people are going to get adjusted to it, but that doesn't actually always remove friction, right? Sometimes that creates more friction. If people like who are your target audience are very busy people, they want to get started with what you're doing as quickly with the product as quickly as possible. They want to onboard with it, don't they, very quickly. If there's all this friction of so many different things going on, there's all this noise, that can create a real problem in the end. People can bounce pretty quickly, can't they? I think that's probably indeed, a major
indeed.
Problem.
And then, And then you come back to the basic. The basic is your core business, right? You need to, and when you can do so much with no less, when you can get access to data to nowadays quite easily, and let's assume that you can filter the noise and so on, you have the right tool set, no matter if it's Bagel or not, right? To help you do that. What matters is now as a product manager or product engineer, depending on, we can talk about that as well, how the definition is being changing. The expectation is that I will be even more domain expert. I will have more time to do the role I was hired to do. And this means understanding not only the value for my customers and the pains I'm solving, but how it actually reflects empirically. Like, how do I measure this impact? And because I have access today to all the data points, I can imagine it wasn't available in the past to connect all these like qualitative feedback with quantitative data, with analytics, with everything. Now I have power, right, to do A/B, real A/B testing, understand what is this needle that moves the business or not. How should I measure, right, success of features? These are core metrics, nothing new here. Just now it's possible to do it, and it's very hard. This is like the hardest question. Successful companies know what drives their business. It's not necessarily ARR, right? It's not necessarily usage metrics like logins. It can be transactions volume in a specific time of the customer journey. It could be a lot of things depending on your business. And today you can measure it. And this will be, if you understand that, this is the impact you should optimize. And this is what will make the difference. This is the focus we were talking about before. What I should make 10 times better. And this is my moat, and versus what's not my business. And I should leave it to the other experts to solve.
So do you think in the past then, because you said a lot of these metrics, are quite old, really. What is kind of new is the ability to be able to put them all together, analyze it, and get the answers quickly, right, in an efficient way. Do you think in the past that product managers spent too much time trying to figure this stuff kind of out, like data was too scattered? Mm-hmm. Was that one of the issues?
Look, a year and a half ago, you had data science in many companies. You had data science, in working in groups with PMs, because PMs needed someone to hold their hands and bring them the data and create these dashboards and connect the dots between different systems. Now this is a done deal. This is solved. Now you have all the power in the world to just test it. Just like test if you actually which metrics you moved and whether that. It's a real indicator of the business or not. And that's your job. You have to do it. You have to understand it. And the faster you'll do that, the faster your business will be more, successful and focused, the fastest you'll take right decisions that actually matters. And the fastest you'll have a stronger moat versus your competitors.
Definitely. Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah. Okay, so we've been talking about AI, and I think, everybody knows, especially product managers, product leaders, that AI is now just going to be a common part of our job. It's Pandora's box is open. You can't ignore it, or you're going to fall behind the curve, basically. That's just the reality of the situation, isn't it? Sure. So we have to take advantage of it. But I think one of the questions people, need to decide, and I think that people contend with, is building AI capability in-house versus buying or adopting an external solution. Can you talk about that a little bit? Talk about like what might be the best solution depending on like kind of what team you're in, what kind of company, maybe weigh up some of the pros and cons for either side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first, the beauty is that, buy versus build is not a new problem or a new, phenomena. It's maybe amplified nowadays because it's very much easier to build, right? But that has been here for ages. That's how software has been sold for ages, right? Why you should buy an HR system, right, and not build it yourself? That's how salespeople sell like the software for 50 years, right? So this is not, the dilemmas are not new. It just amplifies what's important to make sure, and this usually comes to there's a triangle that you need to think of when you do that build versus buy analysis, right? The first one is this my core business? Right? Is this is what I want to spend time? Because there is an opportunity cost. If I'm spending time and resources on something, it's like it means I'm not spending it in other places, right? So should I really spend this even mental focus, right, on something that is not my core business? That's one angle to look at it, to evaluate it. The second is, what is the reliability of that system, right? Meaning, do I trust the data? What are the pitfalls inside? Can I actually take decisions based on that, right? And the third one is the cost associated with it, right? Can be labor, can be hosting, can be tokens, whatever, right? This if you have this triangle and you score according to that, you'll get a good guiding metric versus if you should go and follow that path or not. In my first positions, I worked at a telco communication company called Amdocs, and I was in charge of building internal tools for project managers and version managers and so on. And one of them was an HR management system, and not surprisingly, 2 years later, it was like the advantage was clear. Like, we wanted something secured. We wanted something very like accommodating our own practices. The way we measure FTE and do resource allocation was quite not very much standard with the industry. There were a lot of like things we kind of methods we invented internally, or our financial teams like invented some formulas to size projects. So we wanted to accommodate that. And the only way we thought this is like the best is to build it ourselves. So it was perfect, and a lot of excitement, and all our IT, ITMS in the company were supporting that and put resources to develop it and so on. 2 years later, we started looking outside because we saw first how we are lagging behind the market. The market came up, SAP came up with like a similar and even better solution. PlanView had the same. The vendors in the market offered better solutions. We kept getting requirements for enhancement, from our internal stakeholders. And now we had to come back to the CFO and asking for more budget to upgrade the tool, right? So it was not, maybe we underestimated that in the beginning, but 2 years down the road, that like we actually went and did like a vendor selection and started a project with an external vendor. And this is like, again, this is not new. This I'm talking about 13 years ago, right? So it's not a new problem. That was always there. Now with AI, right, which again does amazing job, right? Amazing job. And it's very, very easy to build. But again, you need to now come back to this triangle. Is it my core business? Because this will require maintenance afterwards. This will take someone to build and maintain and enhance it, right? Is it reliable? Do I trust the data? Does, if I need to pre-process it, or do I need to, do I have, do I understand all the data points as know a master of this domain, and I know how to make it accessible to the right people at the right time with the right insights. And third, cost. I think this is the biggest trap nowadays. There's an open check, right? Today, like, just run fast, just experiment, just do what it takes, you know, to make it happen, right? But in a few months from now, you will see how companies like, oh, and it's already starting, like, they see their billing in their hosting billing or their AI vendor billing, and they see how many tokens they utilize. And because they're also not, that's again, not their business, so they're not optimizing for that. And then this will come back to the decision makers. And at the end, companies need to take the decision whether this is my business or not, whether I'm bearing that cost or not. And probably that I'm better off with someone else that knows how to do it more efficiently.
Yeah. So even, I guess, depending on whether you go in-house or with an external vendor, I guess there's just always the commonality between the two is that it's never a one and done, right? You always kind of have to reassess where you are with things sometimes.
And you have to be accountable no matter what you do, right? It's like you always have to be accountable for that. You need to be accountable on the data itself. You need to be accountable on the cost, right? You need to be accountable of the serviceability, so that it will be always live and working and relevant, right, for whoever you're developing it to, right? By the way, everything I said doesn't mean that you need to buy everything. I'm not saying that at all, right? There are a lot of things that can easily replace nowadays with AI. Many, many things, right? But when you decide that, and again, we're doing the same when we are buying less software nowadays, because a lot of things can be developed internally, and that's a very healthy and good evolution of the market. What I'm saying is that when you do that decision, do that, you know, consciously, and assess the right thing before entering these like episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, accountability and being mindful all the time, I suppose, you know, is always good. I think especially in a time now where technology is moving so fast. I mean, it always has moved fast, but especially now, I think we're in a period with AI, and I think it's important to kind of for leaders, no matter what department you're in, to kind of always be educating themselves and always being staying up to date with what's going on as well. And that can be difficult in a busy job, but I think it's just essential, isn't it? You have to be aware of what your competitors are doing, what the market is doing. You know, it's true. And that's
The hardest is data, right? Like, it's easy today to build very neat UI. It's easy to connect data points. It's easy to break the silos. It's very hard to make the data useful and to bring the right context, right? If you remember, just look at the evolution of, you know, that we're living for 3 years, right? ChatGPT came out, all these horizontal AI players like surfaced and did amazing. They led an amazing breakthrough. But we suddenly had access to a lot of data points, which was amazing for many, many use cases, right? But when you want to go deep, right, that's still a struggle. And that's where the vertical players started to emerge and succeed, right, in the last year. Right? And because that's the difficulty nowadays, to get the right data in the right context at the right time. And that's usually the mode for many of the AI players nowadays.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks so much. Okay, so we want to talk a little bit about roadmap strategy. So it's becoming more common now to think about roadmaps more like a kind of investment portfolios, where sort of each initiative is a kind of, you know, bet where you have to, with expected returns or risks. So what do you think of that way of kind of framing roadmap decisions? Where does it work well, and maybe what are the shortcomings? What do you think?
Yeah, so the good news here is that, you know, the way we're doing roadmap has definitely enhanced. Like, we have more tools to do better roadmapping because of the ability today to, you know, analyze all these unstructured data points and feed that into our decision-making process. We need to, of course, be attentive that we're not creating like a context debt, right? So that we are not blurred by all the noise, and we can filter what matters, because we do always have commitments to customers and some history, some context that is relevant for our specific domain and product. We need to make sure how we make that surfaced above the rest and how we weigh that properly. But definitely, as long as we value that and we treat that well, again, with the focus of our business, today we can do much, much better roadmaps, more accurate, more to the point, understanding all the pain points and so on. This is very, very, very good news. And as I mentioned before, even Claude Code said there's a need that for someone to decide what to build and why it matters. That's here to stay. What is changing? What's the difficulty that is coming, right? So first, I'm not necessarily that the granularity of how we do roadmap will stay the same. I'm actually thinking that this will definitely change and is changing already. The faster we can ship, the faster we can build, the easiest we can build. It means that we have to think in smaller scope units. Think of like CI/CD kind of approach, right? When I can ship autonomously, right, then I need to tune the scope to feed that speed and that these fast iterations. And this is not only for defining the requirements, it's more importantly down the road when I need to test and validate it. I have to be very concise, very accurate about what's the acceptance criteria, what's the target I need to meet, and accordingly guide the machine, right, and with some set of rules or instructions that is manageable and executable. So definitely the definition of scope is changing, right? If you listen to, again, the same podcast I was referring from the head of Claude Cowork, she also says you don't need to plan more than 1 year down the road. Like, your roadmap should be 6-12 months out. And I actually agree with that, right? Because again, you move so fast, it's almost impossible to plan that far, right? And it brings even more importance about the here and now and the midterm. Like, this is what I know I'm gonna do. This is the focus of my business. And now everything should propagate, and everything should feed that strategic north star of the company or the roadmap. Right? So this is what we're seeing already changing and moving. And again, like in the beginning, I said that sometimes we need to think about the basic of our world as product managers. It was true in terms of focus, right? What we are and what we aren't as a business, and it's definitely true in road mapping and product strategy. I strongly recommend a book called Good Strategy, Bad Strategy, by Richard Rumlett, which actually describes what are the kernels of product strategy. And this has never been so important and true as of today. Like, there are basically three steps for a good product strategy, and that should drive our roadmap thinking. The first is diagnosis, understanding what is the right problem or opportunity to solve. The second stage is developing a guiding policy, which is once I know which opportunity I'm solving, what is the right solution for the right audience? That's, again, that's the focus, right? And third is developing coherent actions. How do I prioritize continuously, validate continuously, optimize it, repeat that cycle, that that wheel, right? If, and this, again, this is not new. This has been here for ages. I just, what has changed, that I need to have that mindset and thinking faster this day. I need tools and systems that help me to, you know, mechanize this way of thinking faster, because it is never being so important to follow these steps in order to take the right decisions that matters for my business, and not falling into the trap we talked about before of, you know, just like developing feature because someone wanted it or someone think it's valuable.
I suppose the danger as well as for some product managers is that if you're not using these kind of tools, is that other people are, right? So you're at risk of falling behind the curve if people are, if your competitors are able to make these decisions a lot quicker than you are. I suppose that's one of the issues I was talking about before with AI capabilities is it's a case of being able to stay competitive, right? It's a tricky balance. Keep up with the curve, stay ahead of the curve even without totally losing focus of the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of balance that we're kind of trying to strike in this conversation, right? Like is.
But I'm considering that everybody has some AI tools and access to, and much better access to data. This is like, no matter which tool you choose, or even if you build it yourself, you'll have better access to data. So it comes back now to whether this supports the right decision-making process and the right outcomes that I expect as in the new era of, you know, product management.
Obviously, a lot of challenges these days, product leaders, product managers, especially in the age of technology, of AI, of growing AI, always changing. But if there are just some really solid kind of concrete takeaways that you'd like someone to take from this conversation, what would they be?
Yeah. So I think that there are two takeaways I would strongly recommend, you know, the listeners to have. The first one is, when shipping is cheap, right? Focus and judgment is everything, right? So you need to make sure that, you know, you can trust your data, that you can have the data, trust the data, and ways to measure it that is relevant for your specific business. That's everything nowadays. And that's what will differ excelled PMs and companies compared to good ones. Context is everything and focus is everything. The second thing is when the silos are being broken, and nowadays everybody has access to and more visibility to others in the company, a common language and building trust is even more important, right? And that's, again, you know, leading back to how do I provide the right context, the right data? How do I make sure that I neglect the noise that may surface? And if this is not my core business, then leave it to someone else that does it better, right? Because it's easy to build stuff, but if you build something and provide and mislead, right, your users or your stakeholders, or put or generate a lot of false positives, or, you know, inaccurate or semi-accurate insights, that will come back as a boomerang to you afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I love how, you know, really the kind of the moral of this, or the key lessons of this, is that kind of we use technology to remember what's always been important.
Exactly.
I think is really good, you know, and I think, you know, a lot of people talk about leveraging technology to kind of do what we as human beings can do better than the technology can't replace. But I think that's definitely more true than ever, you know, is sort of give us efficiency so that we can get more strategic, so that we can really get down and focus in on what's important, right? Which I really love that kind of message. Right. I think that's,
it's what I said in the middle of the podcast, right? we need to optimize today time to impact, right? We need to maximize impact in minimum time to market, right? And that's the goal. It's not about developing more features. It's about driving the company towards more impact faster. And that's what we should, that's what technology enables today. And that's what we should, you know, implement to move faster as the market expect us to do.
Yeah. Definitely. That's great. Okay. What do you think is the, just to end on, Ohad, what is the single biggest problem or hurdle or challenge you think that product leaders face today?
I think that the biggest challenge is that there's some blur in the definition, in the world definition, right? Product are becoming more engineering. Engineering are becoming more product. We even see more and more companies, you know, introducing this role called CPTO, right? So the organization is combining and merging, right? So the challenge here would be what's the new skill set, right? Or what's the ratio that we will need in terms of PM and engineers? Who does what, right? That will be solved not by bigger, by the industry, right? But then we need the practices that will support that, because definitely as a PM, our PMs in Bagel, for example, today develop code for production, right? They literally become engineers, right? So they need to make sure they sit on the data for the business data, so they can take this better decision, but they cannot develop super sophisticated stuff. For engineers, it's the opposite, right? Engineers can build sophisticated stuff even with AI, but they lack of, you know, business context of why this is needed from the first place, right? So these two type of roles are combining, and the challenge will be how to build it in a proper way that, you know, actually support and accelerates the company growth versus hindering and creating more noise, less quality, and less stability.
And that's a great note to end on, Ohad. Thank you so much for your time today. If people want to reach out to you, get your thoughts anywhere, where should they go?
They can definitely come to visit our website, Bagel AI, and they can book a demo, and we'll be happy to show them what's product velocity all about.